You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the complex world of enterprise identity, securing legacy web apps at scale can be daunting. Strata Identity makes it simple. With Strata, you can effortlessly integrate non-standard apps with any identity service, like MFA or SSO, with zero coding and zero hassle. Designed by identity architects for identity architects, Strata works with every vendor, standard, and app architecture. This means your apps can now speak modern protocols and integrate seamlessly with your chosen identity services. From securing on-prem web apps to migrating away from outdated identity providers or consolidating them, Strata helps you keep your complex access policies as you modernize your identity infrastructure and get rid of technical debt. Join leading organizations like 3M, Dallas County, and CIBC in securing your apps with Strata. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your identity security priorities, and receive a complimentary pair of AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Connect today at strata.io/cyberwire.
Iranian threat group Phosphorus, or Charming Kitten, has been found active against U.S. elections and other targets. A big database of PII on Brazilians is up for auction on dark web markets. Prince Harry takes a legal whack at Fleet Street. An Atlantic Council session takes a look at electrical infrastructure cyber risk. An Alabama medical system pays the ransom to get its files back. And Hilda Crypt's developers say it was all fun and release their own keys. From the CyberWire studios at DataTribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Monday, October 7th, 2019. At the end of last week, Microsoft warned that a threat group it calls Phosphorus, and that others call Charming Kitten or APT-35, is already actively working to affect the 2020 U.S. presidential election. Phosphorus is Iranian and linked to the Iranian government. The principal target appears, Reuters reports, to be President Trump's campaign, and the activity seems to be in its reconnaissance phase. The threat actors' targets are not exclusively campaign operations. Journalists, government officials, and Iranian expatriates are also of interest to Phosphorus. There were apparently four successful account compromises in the campaign, none of which affected either campaigns or journalists. Comment on the Iranian work has tended to say that Tehran has apparently learned from Moscow's playbook, or at least St. Petersburg's. In some ways, this seems correct. False persona, amplified messaging, attempt to compromise influential accounts, and so on. But in another respect, the campaign differs from those that have emanated from Russia. Russian influence operations have tended to have simple disruption as their aim, with the strategic objective being to widen pre-existing fissures in the societies they target, with a view to eroding trust in those societies' institutions. Such a purely negative objective would seem to be easier to achieve than influencing a society or its leaders in a particular direction. That's what Tehran appears interested in doing. It would apparently welcome a more predictable and tractable American administration. In this respect, the Iranian style in influence operations resembles China's more than it does Russia's. TICE reports that a cyber criminal going by the name X4Crow is auctioning what they claim is 16-gigabyte SQL database holding personal information on about 92 million Brazilian citizens. The data are the usual identity theft gold: names, dates of birth, taxpayer IDs, gender, and mothers' names. Prince Harry is suing the News Group Newspapers and MGN Limited, alleging, according to reports in The Guardian, that the papers were responsible for phone hacking that invaded his privacy. It's an old incident. The Duke of Sussex is claiming damages from hacking the tabloids are said to have committed against royal phones between 1994 and 2011. The New York Times published a wrap-up of the incident almost a decade ago. So why now? The Duke of Sussex has his hackles up at press treatment of his duchess. Speakers at an Atlantic Council event last week warned that cyber attacks on power infrastructure are now a present risk and no longer just a theoretical possibility. Discussions stressed the importance of visibility into the systems that deliver power, and that visibility should extend from the sensor level through utilities' customer-facing business systems. It should also include the power industry's supply chain, as former U.S. Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff argued. The utilities don't operate in a vacuum, he pointed out. They themselves depend upon transportation, telecommunications, and other suppliers to actually operate and provide power. Attacks against that supply chain can disrupt the services the utility companies provide. Siemens released the findings of a survey conducted in partnership with the Poneman Institute, which found that 54% of utilities professionals expected an attack on critical infrastructure within the next 12 months, while only 42% rated their organization's cyber readiness as high. Additionally, 56% of the respondents said they had experienced an attack in the past 12 months that led to the loss of sensitive information or an outage in the industrial environment. The study was based on a survey of 1,700 utility professionals around the world, and it touched on risks to electrical power and water distribution utilities. In general, the utilities are aware of the risk. The task now is to plan to manage it. The Tuscaloosa Post says the DCH Health System unlocked ransomware encrypted files by paying the extortionists. When the FBI last week warned that ransomware had become a matter of high concern because of its high impact, a number of media outlets fastened on to what they took to be the Bureau's change of heart concerning the wisdom of paying ransomware. That's not actually what they said. The Bureau did say that while organizations should evaluate all their options, in general, paying the ransom was a bad idea. There's no guarantee the hoods will actually give you a decryptor that works. In fact, the ransomware is nowadays often really a wiper. While in the early days of ransomware, it seemed that payment often did indeed get you a decryptor that worked, that hasn't been true recently. There's also the downside that paying ransom simply fuels a bandit economy. You tend, after all, to get more of the behavior that you reward, and that's as true of ransomware as it is of problems that range from the horrific, like terrorism, to the merely irritating, like the squeegee kids at the corner of Pratt and President here in Charm City. What the Bureau does advise is that you tell them if you've been hit by ransomware, whatever actions you take to recover. In this case, the DCH Health System seems to have rolled the dice and come up with a lucky seven. Pricey, but at least they got their data back. The developers of the HildeCrypt ransomware strain, which they told Bleeping Computer was never used against anyone, has released the decryption keys to his work. That way, should any script kiddies get a hold of the code and use it against anyone, anyone can decrypt their files. It was never meant to do any harm, they said, characterizing it as more of an educational initiative. If so, it seems a singularly ill-conceived educational initiative, like new math or caning in old British public schools. At any rate, the HildeCrypt masters say they now intend to turn their attention to more conventional and benign activities. Good call. And joining me once again is Joe Kerrigan. He's from the Johns Hopkins University Information Security Institute and also my co-host on the Hacking Humans podcast. Joe, great to have you back.
Hi, Dave.
A story came by via Vice and Motherboard.
Yeah.
This is from Joseph Cox, and the title is Legit-Looking iPhone Lightning Cables That Hack You Will Be Mass-Produced and Sold.
Right. This is from MG, who is demoing these at DEF CON, I think, this year.
Yep.
And selling them for $200 a pop.
And what are we talking about
this
here?
This is a lightning cable. It looks like a lightning cable. It acts like a lightning cable. It does everything a lightning cable does. But it also has a Wi-Fi access point built into it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's one of the benefits, I guess, of miniaturization is we can now build essentially a USB cable that is capable of running a Wi-Fi hotspot on it as well.
Mm-hmm. And this looks exactly like a Apple branded Lightning to USB cable.
It looks very, very similar. MG is saying that he's doing this completely transparently and out in the open and letting everybody know that these things are there, and that's true to his credit that he is doing that. He's not covering it up, not being surreptitious about it. Hack 5 will be selling them. Hack 5 is the company that sells like the Wi-Fi Pineapple and other hacking tools. So
mm-hmm.
seems like a legitimate vendor for these things. But the end result is that I got to tell you, Dave, we're at a point now where if you don't buy your USB cables from a reputable source, then you shouldn't trust them.
Mm-hmm.
I would say you can't trust your Lightning cable unless you buy it directly at an Apple store.
Mm-hmm. I guess I have mixed feelings about the availability of something like this because of how deliberately it's trying to look like a legit cable.
Right.
Which of course, is part of the point here.
Correct.
I can imagine it wouldn't be that hard for someone to buy a real Apple cable, take it home, swap it out for one of these, return it, and have it be put on the shelf at their local Apple store.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Do you have any issues with the fact that these types of things are being sold at all?
I understand your concern with it. I generally don't.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm missing something here, but I think... It's somebody is going to make these things, period.
Okay.
The fact that these are readily available and being talked about openly is better than somebody making them and not talking about them. And I think that's a bigger danger. Because these things have a Wi-Fi access point in them, they are detectable because they're going to have to emit some kind of Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Right? And you can probably see them on a Wi-Fi analyzer, but nobody's going to do that, right?
Well, and how many? Yeah, I mean, open up your Wi-Fi anywhere. There's going to be a dozen devices that are beaconing, you know,
correct,
and
but there's,
they're all going to have random names.
Yeah, but then you have to, if you plug this thing in, you'll see, hey, there's a new one, and the signal strength is strong.
Yeah,
chances are this is a malicious cable, but by then it's probably too late, right?
Right, right.
So maybe you just plug it into a wall adapter first.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but I mean,
so that's going to become part of our routine,
right?
Yeah, no,
no, it's not. It's also not going to become part of our routine to X-ray these cables and make sure they're good. Right, we've talked about doing that before. Take him over to the TSA and let him do that.
I guess the trouble I'm having is that the fact that there is no labeling on this, which I understand is the point.
Right, right. I get your concern.
Yeah,
I get your concern 100%.
Yeah.
It's not an invalid concern, and I'm not 100% married to my position on this either.
Mm-hmm.
You know that this is cool and it's neat that they're making it and Hack 5 does this kind of thing.
Yeah, it's not the only type of tool in this sort of brand of tools. I mean, there's all kinds of similar things that...
Yeah, if you go to Hack 5's website, you can get a Wi-Fi Pineapple, which will let you spoof other people's Wi-Fi.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the device does,
mm-hmm.
Among other things. So, but this is an interesting one.
The fact that it's being mass-produced, so the price comes way down,
right,
which greatly increases the possibility that you could find yourself... subject to one of these.
Right. Imagine these things costing less than an actual Lightning cable from Apple, right?
Right.
And now I sell them on Amazon and in my local area, right, because I can kind of localize where I'm going to sell them.
I'm just imagining just leaving these things around on at trade shows.
Even better.
Just leaving them around because... I think you and I have talked about before. If you leave one of these in the lunchroom at your office
for
a couple of days, it is gone. Somebody's going to notice it, and within a couple of days, if you don't grab it, someone else is going to. Because
exactly.
Ooh, a free Lightning cable.
That's right,
and that's the point.
Yep.
And I'm not sure how you fight against that. Like you said, you buy your own, and I don't know, mark them with a Sharpie so you know yours are yours. I'm just going to lock myself in a room somewhere.
Right. I'm going to get a flip phone.
Pull my abacus out of the closet and
right.
do all my computing that
build,
way.
Build a log cabin in the woods of West Virginia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'll go well.
Right.
All right. Well, I'm curious to hear what our listeners think about this.
Yeah.
You understand my discomfort.
I absolutely understand
your
discomfort.
I understand the legitimate uses of this.
And this does oog me out a little bit.
There's just something about it that it's a mild discomfort that I just can't seem to shake, and maybe the problem is me, not the device.
I don't know, Dave. I don't think it's you. I think the problem is that we're seeing so much now that we're just learning we can't trust anything. We have these things, we have deep fakes, we have other things that you think you can trust, but you just can't trust them.
Right, right. Because what we all need is another source of low level anxiety in our lives.
Exactly.
Right. We're all, yeah. All right.
I don't know what this is going to do to us evolutionarily.
I don't know. All right. Joe Kerrigan, thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure, Dave.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire Daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. And for professionals and cybersecurity leaders who want to stay abreast of this rapidly evolving field, sign up for CyberWire Pro. It'll save you time and keep you informed. Listen for us on your Alexa smart speaker, too. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Puru Prakash, Stefan Vaziri, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.